What's up, everyone? Welcome to the 236th episode of the Pokemon Podcast. It's super effective. I am your host, SBJ. Those are my initials. Next to me, I have Travis.
With 2 weeks in a row without Will on the show and Will's snarky comebacks, I'm developing something strange. And if I were a less wise person, I would call that a sense of self-esteem.
I feel like you've breathed a little more, Travis.
Yeah. Whew, I'm safe. I can say a thing incorrectly and I won't be made fun of.
Will is not with us. He has gone somewhere in Nevada, I believe. I was actually just talking to him this morning. I'm going to be visiting him at the end of October. And yeah, he still exists. But I will be out of town this weekend. We are actually recording this on a Thursday night, a little early. I wanted to ensure that you guys got this on your Monday morning. So if knowing Pokemon, there will probably be 8 new Pokemon shown tomorrow because they love to show the entire Pokedex. Speaking of the entire Pokedex, Pokedex Master Micah is here.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 0 of Yo-Kai Watchers.
Watch your watches. The Yo-Kai Watch comes out tomorrow. That's check. News.
Yeah, fleshy bones and soul stealing soul something. I don't know what it is.
Here's the thing I don't know at all. Is Yo-Kai Watch popular with North American children? Because the everyone was saying before when it was big in Japan that Yo-Kai Watch is going to come and just devour our children and we should all be afraid and no one's going to like Pokemon anymore.
Actually, why Will isn't he's been devoured by Yo-Kai Watch.
My opinion of it is that it was never going to have the same impact that Pokemon has here simply because of the cultural disconnect. It's a very Japanese game. I love it. It's great, but it's not as like culturally ambiguous, I guess, as Pokemon is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you love it or do you just tolerate it?
No, I really like it. I like the characters a lot, and Becky is a big fan of it too. She played all the way through the first game, and I didn't even play all the way through the first game. So
that comes out tomorrow, right?
Yeah, they did. This marks the start.
I believe Fire Red and Leaf Green is their two games. That's what they're called.
Correct. Yep. That's it. This marks the start of their path down the Pokemon road where they split it into two games and you needed to buy both versions
to collect them all, right?
Get all the weird ghosts.
Get all the weird ghosts.
There's one called Phalion. It's an alien in a spaceship and it walks around. Its legs stick out of the bottom.
That sounds
pretty
legit.
Apparently it's a failure.
I could get on board with that. I know there was a Final Fantasy 14, which is the MMO version of Final Fantasy, and a Yo-Kai Watch crossover where you could get, in Final Fantasy, your mount, I think that's what they're called in World of Warcraft, is like a chocobo, and you can get different kinds of chocobos. But for some reason, they partnered with Yo-Kai Watch, and you could ride in the ghost thing. I don't know what it's called. Ghosty.
Whisper.
Casper. A Whisper.
Whisper. Yep, Casper, that's it.
That's it, yeah. You could ride in one of those. I don't know how that collaboration happened.
I don't know either. It was very weird. It's a strange collaboration, and the like hardcore players for Final Fantasy 14 seemed really kind of spurned by it because it required you to do a lot of really apparently tedious things in the game and was not an enjoyable experience.
Final Fantasy players, don't they come to expect tedium? Because that's the only thing that Final Fantasy has. And don't get me wrong, I love a lot of those games, but that's what they are. Hey, remember in Final Fantasy X when we had that area where it was a barren field where lightning would strike about every something like 30 seconds? and it would just flash for a minute, and you would have less than a second to hit the A button to dodge it, and you had to do that 100 times in a row without having your character actually get hit by the lightning, and then we'll give you the Lulu's ultimate weapon. Remember when we did that? Yeah, no, but this is crossing a line.
That's a perfect metaphor for all of Final Fantasy in general. Press a button really, really, really fast, or you just can't progress. You can't progress.
Look, I just wanted to fly in a whisper. That's all I wanted to do.
Man, the Final Fantasy 14 subreddit was so upset during that event.
I bring that up jokingly. I am a big fan of Final Fantasy 14, and I plan to play it a lot. It's like my Christmas game, because I'll be all out of Destiny content by then. It's frustrating to see a cross between Final Fantasy 14 and Yo-Kai Watch, because you will never see a cross of anything Pokemon, because they're so protective of their franchise that it's a little disappointing. I understand why you would be protective of being one of the best-selling games in the entire world, game after game. I think the only franchise that has sold more than Pokemon is Mario, with all together game sales. But at the same time, screw flying on a whisper in Final Fantasy 14.
This
I
should open
fly
up
on like a Pidgeot or a Drifloom or a
yeah, man,
or a
that's what I'm saying.
Or roll on a Snorlax.
They did an Ingress crossover, and that worked out pretty well. So,
I mean, yeah, I guess Pokemon Go.
I guess,
Segway.
I never thought of Pokemon Go as an Ingress crossover.
Yeah,
that you kind of is in the same way that Pokemon Conquest is a.
So this is going to be the last episode Mike is on for throwing that in my face. We got a show for you guys today. We have
B-Squad.
We have a little bit of Pokemon news, and then we are actually going to tackle some emails that have been building up. And then Travis has our Pokemon of the Week. No interviews this week, nothing fancy. There are some more interviews in the works. I know a lot of you guys have provided me feedback on Twitter that you loved the Gaijin Hunter interview, which was primarily Monster Hunter focused, but really, really happy to do that interview. Adam is such a fantastic guy. And if you're a newer listener, we do have some older interviews with Maryland, with Joe from Serebii, with Austin Creed from Up Up Down Down, also known as Xavier Woods, your two-time WWE Tag Team Champion. And we had a great interview about meditation and mindfulness with Dan Reichert, one of the senior editors over at Giant Bomb. So I'm just saying all that because we've gotten we're still getting those new listeners coming on in. But with that being said, jump over to some news.
And if you're new and this is your first episode, I apologize. I'm not normally here.
Hey, Micah, this is coming from a podcasting professional to someone who's maybe a little newer in the way we do things around here. When Steve says, let's go to the news, you're supposed to close your mouth so Steve can edit in the news sound effect, okay?
That's oh, man, it's like Will things. Is here.
Travis has become Will.
Someone had to fill those shoes.
Michael, we'll give you a second chance. Just
I appreciate it, guys. I'm hungry to improve and make you guys happy.
We're giving you a second chance because the Pokemon Company International is giving everyone a second chance at Darkrai.
Nice.
You like that? Marketing professional.
You love that segue, didn't you? Transitions. Okay. Second chance at Darkrai now available in the American region games. If you have XY, Omega Ruby, and Alpha Sapphire, you can use the common serial code Darkrai20. And that code is available until October 31st. Very spooky. If you've already attained Darkrai from the 20th anniversary distribution, you cannot get it, but it is identical to that same move, same ability, same level. This was originally announced to be available through a trainer club email, but since the code is not unique, since it's just Darkrai 20, you can go ahead and enter that, and that will work. There you go. Get your Darkrai. I don't know where you enter that serial code. I think in Mystery Gift, I'm sure there's a way. I've never entered a code to get a Pokemon.
You go to Mystery Gift, and then you go to Via Wireless. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's just get code.
Oh, okay, okay.
Or use code or something. I don't remember.
MysteryGift.com/get code.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. And you send it. You have to send a link to 5 friends
before it expires. Next bit of news.
Or your crush won't love you.
Next bit of news here is a Volcanion code distribution announced for Norway, Sweden, Belgium, and the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, Volcanion codes were first available at the Nintendo booth at the First Look Festival, which happened. Oh, wait. These will be available at the First Look booth. At the First Look Festival at the Nintendo booth, which is going to happen between October 7th through October 9th. That takes place at Jarbeerus, Utrecht, Netherlands. I've slaughtered all those words, so enjoy that.
I'm sure you nailed it, as always.
In Belgium, I'm excellente at English. Belgium codes for Volcanion will be available through GameForce 2016. That will be held from October 1st through the 2nd. In Mechelen, Belgium, and they will also be available at Dreamland, Bronze, and Fun Stores on October 10th until codes run out. I don't know what that means, but I know what that means, but I've never heard of any of the stores, but they exist.
You said so many things I've never heard of in the West.
Apparently they exist in Belgium, so if you're a Belgium listener, write in and let us know what Dreamland is, what bronze is. There's no N, so it's not bronze.
We're still talking about Final Fantasy, right?
Yes. And
these are
fun
locations and variations on the cactuar.
Yeah, right, yes. Go ahead and enter the Dreamland server, and you'll be... Okay, so if you're in Sweden, Volcanion codes will be available through October 1st through the November 23rd. At GameStop. I think we all understand that. Sweden seems to be on the right page with codes. Get them at GameStop. Also available at 2 other stores that I can't say, but if you're in Sweden, I'm sure you know what they are. And yeah, Volcanion has not come to US yet. It does say, though, on the official Pokemon site, Volcanion distribution in UK, Germany, France, Italy, and Spain. Those are coming soon, and the Volcanion will know Steam Eruption, Flamethrower, Hydro Pump, and Explosion. It will also be holding an Assault Vest. So there you go. Who would have guessed Volcania would have the move Explosion? But I guess it does.
Is that sarcasm? Because volcanoes are known for explosive behavior.
All right. Literally exploding.
I see. All right.
I wasn't sure if I was missing. All right,
so this is
going to
be Travis's last episode for throwing that in my face. Charizard and Ninetales Break, also Mewtwo EX, are shown for the XY Evolution TCG set, the 71st expansion of the Pokemon trading card game. Will bring let that sink in. The 71st expansion of the Pokemon trading card game is planning on bringing the original series back as power-up retro cards alongside new Pokemon EX and Pokemon Break cards. The official release date for this set is November 2nd, with select retailers giving permission to release it as early as October 30th. This set is to be based on the Japanese expansion pack 20th anniversary, with a few Japanese promotional cards included within. The set will include over 100 cards, 12 new Pokemon EXs, including 5 Mega Evolutions, 4 new Pokemon Break cards, and a reinvention of the very first Pokemon trading cards. Yeah. It shows the original Charizard card here. From what I remember, the original Charizard card had 120 HP, and its move did 120 damage, but maybe I'm wrong.
I honestly don't remember.
I don't remember, even though I've seen that card a million times.
This is your wheelhouse.
It does 100 damage. Fire spin.
In the base set.
Yes.
OG Charizard, 100 damage. What was its HP?
120. You nailed that on the head.
Okay.
Hit that nail on the head.
What was its... its ability is the same, but I'm sure... What was its ability called?
Its Pokemon power was Energy Burn, and its move is Fire Spin.
Okay. So the new card, Charizard, is same art, unless they're changing it, but 150 HP, ability Energy Burn. I think back then it was called Poke Power.
Yes.
Like Micah said, all energy attached to this Pokemon are Fire Energy instead of their usual type, which I think is the same.
Yes.
And the move is Fire Spin, still the same. 4 energy, 200 damage. Discard 3 energy cards attached to this Pokemon. I think that is the same too, minus the damage. Because Micah said it was 100, this time it's 200.
Yeah, and it was discard 2 energy cards attached to Charizard in order to use it.
Oh, this is, so this is discard 3, okay.
Energy Burn 2 on the original Charizard was that... Before you attack, you can turn all the energy cards into fire energy for the rest of the turn. And then it can't be used if Charizard is asleep, confused, or paralyzed. I don't know if that's changed.
I think abilities... I haven't played the TCG in so long. The ability still is in play unless otherwise stated. So in this case, on the new card, even if Charizard is asleep... All the energies still attached to them still would be fire energy, even if they were water energy. Yeah.
Okay.
This fits more in line with the current format of. I watched Worlds and Nationals, and it's the TCG format is still aimed at trying to do 2 hits to kill a Pokemon. So ideally, you would want your move to be 90 to 100 damage, so you can ensure that you do. At least 180 damage in 2 turns, because most Pokemon sit at that, I would say, 170 to 190 range. Charizard being 150 HP is a little bit below that, but its move, 200, should be able to wipe out most things in one hit. That being said, cards that require 4 energy are almost never played. It's just way too high. Realistically, you could attach 2 double colorless energies and get there in 2 turns for Charizard. But since you can only have 4 double colorless in your deck, those are pretty slim odds. I could be completely mistaken if there was a card in the game that would let you move fire energy around. That might help. I would assume any card that does that is probably another stage 2, and you would almost never want to play 2 stage 2s in a deck. You would want to play like the Charizard line because it is stage 2, plus... other Mega and or EX Pokemon because they're single stage and you can get them out and set up faster. But again, that's my TCG knowledge has been a little bit disconnected since I stopped playing competitively. Speaking of competitive stuff, the International Championships 2017 Play Pokemon details were announced. It's a lot of text here. I'll try to summarize it, but... Maybe I'll just go through here. Details have been announced. The International Championships are a new tournament that will replace the National Championships from previous years. Unlike the Pokemon TCG National Championships of previous years, the Internationals are open to players from anywhere around the world. 2 have been announced so far, the Pokemon European Championships and the North American Championships. The Pokemon International will be some of the largest competitions in the 2017 championship schedule, and winners will earn high number of championship points towards qualification for the 2017 Worlds. The European International will take place at the XL London in United Kingdom from December 9th to the 11th, 2016. This 3-day event will give video game players their first chance to battle in sanctioned events using Pokemon Sun and Moon, which launches in Europe on November 23rd and the rest of the world on November 18th. The TCG players will have their first chance to play the XY Evolutions expansion launching later this year. Hey, we just talked about that. In each rating zone, the top 4 players of TCG and video games in each age division who participated during the 2016 Championship Series will also receive travel awards to the European Internationals. Invitations are based on their championship points at the end of the 2016 season. Travel awards do not pass. They pass down or stack. In each rating zone, the TCG players who ranked 5th through 16th and the Pokemon video game players who ranked 5th through 8th in each division will also qualify for a travel stipend of $1,000. Participation for the European International is required to redeem a travel stipend. And this will also be live streamed on twitch.tv/Pokemon with commentary. Starting this October, Pokemon Regional Championships begin with a full schedule of events coming to cities in North America and Europe. For the 2017 Championship Series, regionals events will no longer be clustered into three seasonal periods spread over the calendar year. Like the International Championships, regional championships are open to TCG and video game players from anywhere in the world and will feature larger prize pools and more championship points at the tournament. The prize pools for each regional championships can be as high as $50,000 depending on attendance. Each regional event, regardless of location, will use the same attendance-based thresholds for calculating the available prize pools. The actual amount and sizes of these prizes awarded at the event will depend on the number of participants. The more people who come to compete, the more prizes available, so that the players who win the largest, most competitive events will earn the biggest prizes. The first North American Regional Championships will be held in Phoenix, Arizona on October 1st. Oh gosh, that's like 2 days. All right. Guess we'll have something to talk about next episode.
Man, that's a lot of money. That's almost as much money as you can win from playing professional rock, paper, scissors.
A little bit more real quick. I feel like there's a story there. There will be more local events for both the video game and trading card game. Premier Challenge and Mid-Season Showdown events will return for video game players. Premier Challenge provides players with frequent opportunities to play at local events and try out new strategies at smaller events, while Mid-Season Showdowns are... Who came up with... That name is pretty decent. Mid-Season Showdowns are larger events that give players opportunity to compete against a greater number of players for a greater number of championship points in their local area. Trading card games, players can participate in League Cup events held at local stores. Final bit of news on this is the Pokemon Video Game Championship Series events will use Ruby and Sapphire, not the original, Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire, until November 30th. Then on December 1st, the format will change to Pokemon Sun and Moon, and all video game players may only compete using those games for the remainder of the season. The full breakdown of the video game championship structure can be found here. Finally, the Pokemon Trading Card Game Championship Series events will use the 2016-2017 standard format Primal Clash and On, and the extended format Black and White On. The full breakdown of that point system can be found here. For the rest of the information, Pokemon.com.
How funny would it be if when Sun and Moon come out, we find out that Wishiwashi has incredibly good stats and move pool, such that we hear competitive players complaining about the Wishiwashi meta for a full season?
That would be pretty fantastic.
Or the Bruxish meta. The dang Togedemaru meta.
Yeah.
Is ruining the spirit of the game.
Much like the famed Basculin meta.
Yes. Yes. Everyone was all after that.
Of yesteryear.
That Soak meta.
Didn't you try to run? Isn't your team partly based around Soak?
No, not really. It was mostly based around Maractus.
That's what it was.
Soak did come in, obviously, because once Maractus got set up, oh boy, he was a powerhouse. I was talking with, I mentioned this before on the podcast, but I was talking with Joe and Serebii on Twitter. Joe from Serebii. Sorry, I said that fast. And we were both laughing because a lot of people are finally considering play Pokemon, quote unquote, esports. And I feel like it's always kind of been esports, right? You've always gone, at least in my eyes, I've went to competitions. I've been to way too many competitions than I have enjoyed. That makes sense, yeah. I've been to a lot of competitions. I really didn't enjoy most of them for reasons I've expressed, you know, the how the judges are on and how the time limit is. And there's nothing more frustrating than traveling 200 miles for a competition to be paired against your girlfriend the first round. That is the most frustrating thing in the world, because at the time, I don't think I've ever said this, like at the time, I felt like I was a decent TCG player, and Irene was actually very good as well. She's never made top cut, but you know, she's come close, and I feel like for me, bubbling a lot and making top cut a couple times, like, that is not what you want to do. You don't want to go, well, one of us isn't going to make it right off the bat. No, good thing we've traveled 200 miles to be here, and good thing this tournament's about, you know, 16 hours long, and heck, we probably ain't gonna, we're not going to get a lunch, are we? No, because it's a Pokemon tournament. But yeah, Joe and I were joking, because they were like, oh, it's esports. The only difference between now and, you know, what it was 3 or 4 years ago is there's more money on the line. And that's really it. I mean, they can change the point structure. They can change how you get the points or how many points you get or who's getting points and who's not getting points. But when I used to play, there was no entry fee. You just showed up, you filled out your form, you sat down and you played, and then you went home disappointed. Now, from my understanding, which happened about 2 years ago, if you're as long as you're a master, which is 16, 17 plus in age, you have to pay $25 to $30 even to compete. And that did, at the time, bump up the prize pool. And now the prizes seem higher. They say $50,000 depending on attendance. I doubt we're going to see any $50,000 off the bat because, again, it's based off attendance. And Top Cut was always based off attendance. If you had, you know, 60 people competing, you're probably going to have a Top Cut of 4. Whereas if you had, you know, 300 people competing, you're probably going to have a Top Cut of 16. So it's kind of set up in the same way in this regards. My question to you two is, with new rules in place of how to get points, with new tournament structures in place, with a bigger prize pool in place, is this something that has convinced you, maybe I want to get back into the competitive Pokemon scene? I know, Travis, you were once there. I know, Micah, I think you dabbled in the Magic competitive scene, but does this do anything for you guys?
I was considering getting back into VGC regardless when Sun and Moon come out, so it's hard for me to say if sweetening the pot would have would have convinced me had I not already basically made that decision, but realistically, no, because there's no way I would be seeing a single dollar of any of that money because I'm awful. So for me personally, no, but I could, and I do plan on getting back into VGC, but I could see how increasing the prize pool would be healthier for the very, very top level of players to incentivize there to be a very competitive echelon of top tier players, because if there's not very much money in it, then there aren't a lot of incentives other than just we like the game, which is obviously a strong incentive, but there's a point in the at which the dedication you have to be that competitive, there has to be some monetary reward for it.
Right.
I mean, how else are you supposed to get Pokemon branded Gunner glasses too? I mean,
Micah, the
real MLG,
the magic
LED,
scene is always
LED lit keyboards.
The Magic scene has always had somewhat of a pretty high prize pool,
big money,
but the Magic scene has the disconnect of really, I mean, yes, there is a Magic video game and there have been Magic video games, but it's not like a Hearthstone or a League of Legends or a Dota or
Magic the Gathering Battlegrounds for original Xbox.
Right.
top tier S rank game. No, I recently, okay, this is, so I played Magic a lot. Like, I played it a lot through high school and on into a little bit of college, and I played very competitively. And I got to a point where it was, in a lot of ways, paying for itself. It was like a self-sustaining hobby to some degree. And from experience, maybe it's changed a lot, but in my experience, the Magic community is probably one of the most toxic competitive communities I've ever participated in. It's pretty awful, but I mean, it's got its upsides and it's got its downs, but it's, I would hope that the Pokemon competitive scene is not quite as bad. I know a lot of competitive scenes can be kind of toxic. Like,
does that manifest just in bad attitudes of players or
yeah,
or
like there's
weird
there's
factions or
no, it's mostly just like a lot of the, I'm not saying everybody, I met a lot of guys that were really nice in Magic competitive, but there are, it seemed to me that the like aggressively offensive outweighed the like nice and positive. But that, again, that's my experience. That could be completely different for everybody else, you know. But I would hope that Pokemon would be different from that. But to me, I guess Pokemon has never been like, I've never looked at Pokemon as something that I wanted to spend a lot of time in it competitively, because it's always been something to me that's more of like a personal experience between me and my friends, I guess, and my battling and so on and so forth usually just takes place with the people that it's the immediate people I surround myself with. I've never considered it, I guess, because of that. And I don't know that I would. It's too much of I like the kind of enclosed environment that I have Pokemon in, I guess.
Sure. I mean, I've met some pretty amazing people playing the TCG competitively. I've also met some of the worst people in the world playing the TCG competitively. There's nothing like a normal human being can sit down at a table with somebody else, and you can pretty quickly tell if the person at the other end of the table is somebody that you would want to strike up a conversation with, or somebody who just isn't in the mood to talk, or maybe that person is just a complete jerk. Like, you can kind of get that feeling when you sit down and see somebody, you know, when they're
right
5 feet away.
Well, and I think you get that too with Magic. And I think one of the things that I learned from it is that people who play it, the way that they play it, can be a lot different from who they actually are.
Yeah.
There's a level of like competitive mind games that goes into sitting down and
please only call me the Joker when I'm at the table.
I think what
doesn't normally come at like I and I've said this before to friends of mine, and I have friends that I still talk to that saw this in action, but there were things that like the way that I acted during a Magic game is way different from who I am normally. Like I could be a really annoying jerk at the table, but outside of that, I mean, it's part of like playing it, you know.
Yeah,
it's like a mindset that you slide into. I hate like playing against people who are doing the same thing. It's the worst, and I hate it, and I hate that I was ever like that, but you know, it's part of competitive.
What always threw me off was when you sat down at a table and you're having a great conversation with the other person about who knows what, right? Like, oh, like you're wearing a Penny Arcade hoodie or a Harry Potter hoodie, and so like let's talk about that. And you're playing the game, you're having a great conversation, and then what always blew my mind was when that person realized that they lost or that they messed up and there was probably no coming back, that they would shut off that friendly personality pretty instantly and just become extremely aggressive. And I understand, like, if you're losing, to maybe like get quiet or just kind of be like disappointed or sad that you made mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes, even some of the best players. But it was always just shocking to go, we had an amazing conversation seconds ago, no one has moved from this table, and now...
That was before you got that nasty donk.
Right. Well, I mean, if we got the donk, we wouldn't be having much of a conversation. But now, to not only become aggressive, but to start playing slower, to start stalling, to start...
Oh, man. And the card flick?
To start being... There's to me, in a competitive game, there's always... I always was the I don't know if this is a real rule in chess or if it's a real rule in other games, but when you're playing chess and you let go of the piece, I played chess in high school, by the way.
Oh yeah. When 100%.
When you let go,
I know exactly what you're talking
when
about.
When you let go of the piece, your move is done.
That's it. It's over.
It's over.
You made your move.
You've made your move. If your hand is on the piece and you're moving it and you're moving it back and you lift it up and you grab another piece, that's fine. But once you let go of that piece that you've moved, your turn is done. And that is how it is in Pokemon. That is an actual rule. Once you play a card,
right,
you're done.
Right.
And it is up in the rules. It is up to your opponent to let you take that move back. And so if I play an energy card on my Squirtle and I meant to play that on my Vanillux, I could go, I messed up. Can I take that move back? And, you know, again, it depends on who you're playing with. They might say no. I've gotten a couple of responses. Sometimes I get no. I'm sorry. It's just a competitive game. I hope you understand. I get sure. Or just like a yeah. In just tournament senses, if I let a person take a move back, right? So if Micah plays grass energy on his Nuzleaf, and he goes, can I take that back? I meant to play it on my Ditto. If I say yes, my reasoning is I'm going to make a mistake, and I want them to say yes when I do it. And the minute that other person doesn't do it, I want to flip the whole table. Which has happened, right? And so then you get bitter into the next round and somebody makes a mistake and you go, no, it's a competitive game. I hope you understand. And it becomes like this toxic that builds up over the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've been in situations where the person's made a mistake and I go, oh, okay, like, yeah, take it back. And they say the same to me, like, oh, okay, you know, take it back. But I've been in situations where we both say no, and it's just that's the setup we formed prior to that match. But I don't know. It's just I got out of it mostly because I could have used that time for other stuff. I mean, obviously now I'm doing three different podcasts and everything, so it would be hard to fit time in that. But no matter how, somebody could always say, you know, just go and have a great time. Just, you know, don't worry about it. It's just a game. You love Pokemon. Go and play and have fun. It is so hard to do that when you're sitting next to a person that, the example I used was, we were just having a great conversation. We were just playing a game, and yeah, maybe I'm winning now. And it's nothing against you. Somebody has to win in this situation. But don't, like, don't flip on me and be extremely aggressive, because I'm here to have fun. I'm here to have a great time. And now you have, like, just stomped that into the ground.
Right. I think aside from maybe like the first year that I was playing at the time was called DCI sanctioned events. I don't know what it's called now. Like, their competitive stuff. The like organization was the DCI. But for my first year of playing DCI stuff, I probably was like pretty on the fence about that. But after that first year, it was 100% shut it down. Like, if your hand comes off the card, that's it. If you touch my card, I'm calling the judge. Like, really aggressive. But that's the way it was. That was the, like, atmosphere. Everybody was like that. And it got to a point where it was just, like, not fun to be like that, I guess. I will say, though, I think it was last month, I watched the Magic World Championships on Twitch. They aired it on Twitch, and I watched it just because I was interested. I haven't seen anything Magic related in a while. I thought it was kind of interesting that they were airing the championships on Twitch, so I watched it. And it was the like the game type that I used to play competitively, which is like the most current sets in rotation rather than like everything old, which they call like legacy or whatever. And it was interesting to watch, but one of the things I noticed was how much nicer everybody was to each other. It was really surprising to turn it on and see all of these guys sitting at these tables and like being really polite to one another and shaking hands after games and like say talking about tactics afterwards and telling them what a great job they did if they won and you know, the person that's telling them lost. And it was pretty surprising, but I still have that like taste in my mouth from those old experiences of like it was never that friendly.
Yeah, and I've seen, you know, on just recent Twitch streams of Pokemon and stuff, you almost always see good sportsmanship, but it's almost like you have to work past the trash / garbage bitter people to get there.
Right.
No one,
and
is,
I'm sure
no one
internally
is streaming the like round robin grind that precedes all of these tournaments, where presumably most of the sadness happens.
I'm assuming that still, you know, Friday Night Magic that's happening and a little tiny game store that nobody is talking about is still a plethora of, you know, horribly offensive things are being said on a regular basis and cards
have
are being thrown
my,
and tables
have I
are being
told
flipped.
My, have I told my Friday Night Magic story on this show?
No. Why don't you tell it, and then we can.
I
we
think
can,
you should now.
we can break after that, because yeah, that's all I got for news.
I can't remember if I must have been in middle school or early high school, but I think middle school. Yeah, it was middle school. I went to a Friday Night Magic at the. There wasn't anything in the town where I lived, but there's one in like the next town over. So my brother and I drove down there. And we went to this game store that we'd never been to just because we saw online that they did Friday Night Magic. And we walk in, and the look of shock that there were customers that the owner didn't recognize on everyone's face was like, how did they find us? There was a super broken in couch where some dudes were playing Double Dash on a GameCube. And there was a place where a counter at which you would buy trading cards, but it really looked like it was just an operation where some pals could hang around and play video games with the pretense of being a game store, because there was very little in the way of selling anything, and a lot of, if you didn't see the counter, it would just be someone's house. If the counter where there was like a cash register and some singles and packs laid about. And then we didn't know what we were doing in Magic, so we got our butts handed to us. And then we're like, that wasn't really fun. We got our butts handed to us and the place was kind of sketchy. I happened to be in that town again shortly after that, and I wanted to buy some packs, so I was like, yeah, even though that place wasn't that great, I'll just go in and buy some packs. And the guy recognized me, and he was like, oh, are you gonna, you and your brother, are you gonna come back? You know, we're playing next week, another Friday Night Magic. I was just like,
please come back, we have no customer.
Yeah, basically. And I said, no, I don't think we will. And we didn't. That's my
beautiful
story.
Solid.
I will say that there were some really amazing shops and like shop owners that I experienced. Like, probably my most positive experiences playing Magic were interacting with people who ran shops, because they were some of the nicest guys I've ever met. And the most memorable shop for me was actually kind of over by where you live, Steve. It was called VGC, and it stood for Video Games and Cards, which is an incredibly clever name for a store that sells cards and has a video game system in the front. And it was the first place that I ever discovered Super Monkey Ball. So there's a little that has like a, anytime I play Super Monkey Ball, I think about that place. But it was just ridiculous there. Like, the guys that ran it were like big kids, and they had it was super fun for them to do. And everybody there for the most part was really nice. And we would do ridiculous things. Like, we, at one point during a break through like drafting, we decided that we were going to try the SpongeBob SquarePants trading card game that they happened to just get in. So then we took it super serious and like, we're drafting SpongeBob cards. Like, it was a fun time.
That sounds incredible. Yeah, I don't know much what else we could really say on the changes to the format competitive wise. I feel like Pokemon's chasing the Dota and League of Legends and especially the Hearthstone crowd of trying to get more people to play their games with a higher prize pool. More money brings in more people, right? I guess that's what it comes down to.
I suppose that's true. I mean, 50K.
Up to 50K, yeah.
Up to 50K is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see how that pans out, especially with the next tournament starting relatively soon. We'll keep our finger on that. But right now, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do a couple of emails, and we have our Pokemon of the Week. And we are back from our break. We can talk about some emails.
Real quick before we do emails, can I just give a shout out to you? I was going to do this at the start, but I forgot. I want to give a shout out to Miss Delaney in the It's Super Effective Slack community for hooking it up at 4 a.m. my time with a Hoopa.
Were you just missing that for your Pokedex?
That was it. I was missing Hoopa. As far as like, you know, event stuff goes, that was the only one that I was missing. So thank you. I appreciate it. I got my prison bottle, and I'm ready for a bunch of arms.
Speaking of Patreon, you've reminded me. I just want to take a second and thank everyone. Yeah, listeners and Patreon people who back us on Patreon and don't listen. I don't know if there's that circle overlaps. I don't think so, but as of us recording, we are at 242 Patreon backers, almost to that 250. And I couldn't be more happy and more grateful, pleased, excited. I got a lot of words I can use. That's why it's hard. It's just super flattering to have you guys throw a couple bucks our way a month for us to do cool things. It means a lot. Something like the PAX panel wouldn't have happened without the Patreon, and Dungeons and Dragonites probably wouldn't have happened without the Patreon. And now Mazes and Magikarps is something that's happening, and Greg and I are talking about a season 3 of that, which we have a couple names picked out for. But just a lot of cool things happening because of what you guys support. And I know a lot of you guys are asking for another movie night so we can watch a movie together. That is planned for October 8th, which is a Saturday. We're thinking 8 p.m. Central Time. I'm not sure which movie we're going to watch. It depends
on... How do you manage 100% of the time to pick these movie nights on nights that I cannot do it? Almost every single one. Okay, I'll stop.
You know, I look at your calendar first and I go, well, I don't want Travis there. So here we go. So October 8th, 8 p.m. Central Time. The time could slightly change depending, but that Saturday is going to be our next movie night.
Can we watch the movie where Latios kisses Ash? That was a movie, right?
Oh, you better believe that was a movie. Pokemon Heroes, to be exact. There it is. I don't know if that is on Hulu or Netflix, or I'm not sure, but we can look into it.
I don't believe it is. I was Carly wanted to watch it the other day. Well, I said we should watch a Pokemon movie, and that's the one she suggested.
She jumped right to hear us.
Which I thought was odd, but...
People only are watching Heroes for one thing. They know what they're getting into. As always, the $10 Patreon backers will have first access, and then the rest of the Patreon people will have access after that. And then after that, after they get the links, that'll go out on Twitter and Facebook, just to give them a little bit of priority, understandably, since they're the ones that asked for it. The other new thing coming to Patreon is there is, speaking of Miss Delaney, there is a pen pal club started, which is really cool. She's doing the whole thing. She's running that. But what it entails is that every month you get put into a group of people, and you are supposed to send them a handwritten letter, and they will send you one back, and it's a pen pal club. So I think that's really cool. I know there's a bunch of people in there, and they're doing their trial run this month, so I think the open run for the rest of the Slack will be after October 10th, if I could be a little off on that date. So if that's something that tickles your fancy, and you're a Patreon backer, that's something we'll be doing. And I'm sure I'm forgetting some stuff, but let's jump into emails and it'll give me time to remember. If you want to send us an email, you can send us an email about anything, Pokemon or not, sbj@pkmncast.com, or just head over to Pokemon. Or just head over to PokemonPodcast.com /contact. Really tried not to drop the ball there, and I did anyways.
No, you did it. It was great.
Guess that's staying in. Tyler writes in, says, "Dear SBJ and co-host, Will is my favorite." Got some bad news for you, Tyler.
I'm really sorry that this is the episode that your letter gets picked on.
This is the train wreck you signed up for. He writes in and goes, "I love your show, and the D&D episodes make me laugh. I've been listening to your podcast since episode 224, relatively recently. I hope that I will be able to buy Sun and Moon on launch day. I have never bought a game on launch day. I was wondering if you could read this on the show, and it would be great. I have two questions. First, your favorite Alolan Pokemon, and second, your favorite generation of Pokemon. Thanks, everyone, for the wonderful episodes every time. Tyler."
I already forgot the first question.
Favorite Alolan Pokemon.
Oh.
Favorite Alolan Pokemon.
Right now, it's between Alolan Meowth and Alolan Exeggutor for me.
All right. I mean, it's easy for me. It's Alolan Exeggutor.
I mean, are we talking about like Alolan type or just...
I think we're talking
like the Alolan type, forms. But like Alolan version.
Yeah, yeah.
Or any from Alola.
I think Alolan version. That's how I took it.
Alolan, does it say favorite Alolan form Pokemon, or does it say favorite Pokemon from Alola? My answer to the question, what is my favorite Pokemon from Sun and of the newly announced ones, is Mimikyu.
Same. 100%. And any answer otherwise is wrong.
Correct.
Let me tell you about Alolan Exeggutor.
If it's specifically Alolan versions of Pokemon, I'm going to have to say probably Alolan Meowth. I really like Alolan Meowth a lot.
All right.
Look at me. I'm the little Venn diagram middle section between the two of you. I connect these... I am the vital center.
That's right.
Of this podcast recording.
Don't get me wrong, Alolan Exeggutor is sweet. But there's something about Alolan Meowth that's just, it's like,
it's a little cheeky.
Yeah. There's something there.
Favorite generation?
Two. I like Gen 2 and I like its remix. both a lot, and I realized that the remakes are Gen 4, but I thought Gen 2 not only had one of the most fun regions to play in, it also had great pacing in comparison to the games that came in comparison to Gens 1 and 3. It had what I think everyone still agrees with, perhaps the exception of its own remakes, the best post game of any Pokemon generation, with allowing you to return to Kanto and battle those gyms again. And Piloswine comes from Gen 2, and Piloswine's my favorite Pokemon.
Micah?
I would say either 1 or 2. Mostly because 1 has just... It just has so much... I just have so many great memories tied to Gen 1.
Gen 1 or Micah over here?
As much as everybody wants to just be like, Micah's a Gen 1-er. It's just, you know, they were great experiences. I have a lot of fond memories of playing on a brick Game Boy with my brother.
Yeah.
But I do also really like Gen 2 because it was such a fantastic improvement on Gen 1. And like the foundation of Gen 1. And the fact that you could return was also a big deal for me too, because it was like getting to experience everything that I fell in love with again. And the music in Gen 2 is just A+.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great. It's a hard choice though, I'll say that, because I've liked a lot of things from every generation.
Right, yeah. Usually the question is, what's your favorite game? And that's, for me, Heart Gold Soul Silver. Generation wise, I have a strong connection to Gen 4. I think that was the game that really reminded me why I liked Pokemon so much in the first place. I would be very curious for a remake of Gen 4 to see if that holds up the same way, but there's a reason my cat is named Sinnoh. So yeah, Gen 4.
The interesting thing to me about the prospect of a Gen 4 remake, at least a few things. First, maybe it's just, I mean, this is purely anecdotal because I don't have a sample size large enough, but to me it seems like Gen 4 doesn't get a lot of love. Gen 4 is a generation that, like Generation 3, has a lot of critics. I am not one of those. I think Generation 4, and then like a lot of people love Heart Gold and Soul Silver, but not a lot of people love Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum, which I do. I think it's interesting that you don't see as much clamoring for a Gen 4 remake as you saw for Gen 3 remakes. At least my perception is you don't see as many people now asking for a Gen 4 remake as you saw after Gen 2 is remade, wondering when is there going to be a Ruby and Sapphire remake. And I recognize that could possibly be
those people were insane.
I realize that part of it has to do with the fact that Gen 5 came and went with no remake after Gens 3 and 4 both had remakes within those generations. But you don't see a lot of clamoring for a Gen 4 remake. And I guess my second point is that Gen 4 to me, and maybe this is just my getting old, but Gen 4 to me still feels like a modern enough game.
I was going to say it's like pretty recent still.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if there hasn't been enough time passed to have it be nostalgic enough.
I was still living with my parents when Gen 4 came out.
I mean, it was what, 5 years ago?
Gen 4?
What,
more than that?
6 years ago?
No, try like 12 years.
No, my bad. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Gen 5. I don't know why I completely blended those two together. Maybe that speaks to how much.
Maybe that speaks to you hating Gen 4. 2006, a decade ago.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, maybe
2007 in North America.
Maybe that's enough time. I don't know. I think I had this theory way back when I was on an episode around the time that Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire were launching, that my theory is that all of the excitement and the like clamoring for Gen 3 remakes was because it was a period where a lot of people who were original Pokemon players fell out of Pokemon at the time that Gen 3 came out. Like, it was around the time where people were were old enough to be playing it originally and you know, remember, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I get what you're trying
people
to say.
People who are players are like, you know, in middle school or whatever, like the target age group for the original games. Those people were in high school or going into high school or leaving high school when Gen 3 was coming out. And a lot of them were just getting to a point where it was like, it wasn't cool to like Pokemon anymore, you know? Like, they felt like it, because they were in high school, they were too old for it and things like that. And I feel like there were a lot of people who missed Gen 3 because of that and maybe were wanting remakes because they didn't get to really experience it the same way that they got to experience other stuff. I know that I had a lot of friends that missed Gen 3. I didn't, because I don't care. I'll like whatever I want. I do. I'm an adult.
And, I don't think
I had a lot of friends that didn't play Gen 3. They skipped it because of those reasons. Like, they felt like,
or were they
had like grown out of it.
But then they
rediscovered it after, you know.
Were they the people who were clamoring for remakes, though? I feel like
100%.
Really? Because my experience is the people asking for remakes of Gen 3 are a little younger than I am, and I realize I sound like a wise guru who's clearly in their 80s just because of the wisdom that I have, but
you're
I'm actually
dad.
23 years old.
You're everyone's Pokemon dad.
Yeah, exactly. And even as a 23-year-old person, I feel like the fact that I started on Gen 1 is a little strange for someone my age, because, gosh, when did Gen 1 come out in North America?
98? 99?
Yeah, I was born in late 92, so I would have been 6 or something.
Feel like that's about, like, target age range for what they were shooting for.
But barely, right? Like, if I were 5 or 4... I would not.
I feel like their target age range is 10. I don't know. Maybe because everything in the Pokemon world revolves around a 10-year-old.
Well, you want to aspire to be your character. So the target age is like 8, because then you think, oh, man, this game lets me be 10.
This kid's 10?
Double digits.
I can't even imagine what it's like to be 10.
Just like the target demographic of the magazine 17 is not for 17-year-olds. Anyway, I lost my train of thought a little bit, but what I'm saying is people around my age either started very young on Gen 1 or started on Gen 2, and or maybe started on Yellow. There's a lot of people my age that started on Yellow because it came out just late enough that it hit us when we were old enough to comprehend what was happening in our video games. But people just a few years younger than me were caught in that liminal space when Gen 2 came out, that they might have been a little too young to fully enjoy that game. So the first Pokemon game that they had that they were old enough to really get into was Gen 3. And in my experience, it's those people, it's people a few years younger than me that are the huge Gen 3 fans, understandably, because it's the one that they're able to connect with fully first.
Yeah.
And I always feel like it's those people that were asking for
sense.
A Gen 3 remake, but I don't know. That's my experience.
I'm sure it was a combination of those groups that were probably really, because I mean, when I say that these were people who skipped it, I mean, they skipped it at the time. Like,
yeah,
where obviously they rediscovered the games and they went back and played Gen 3, and it was like God's gift to Pokemon was Gen 3, which in my personal opinion, maybe not so much. I like Gen 3 the same way that I like Gen 4 or Gen 5, but you know, it's
you're giving
not,
Gen 3 too
not,
much credit.
It wasn't anything like, as someone who played through it at the time, it wasn't, I don't know, it didn't really stand out that much. I think maybe part of it too is that it came hot off the heels of Gen 2, and that was like one of the high points for me.
I mean, like, yeah. I think it comes down to re-releases make money.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I would be more surprised if a Diamond and Pearl re-release didn't come out, because Pokemon has been on a 3-year schedule of main series games. It's been 20 years and 7 main series games now, and the re-releases have only just padded in between. Because if you're a company that, when you put out a Pokemon game, that game becomes the number one bestseller for months, it would be silly to sit on nothing for 2.5 years in between game releases. The remakes or the spinoffs are just easy ways to keep the money flowing in.
Oh, absolutely. I do think though that if they're not like wise to it already, that they will get wise to it, that they need to start slowing the remakes though, because they're gonna just catch up at some point.
But then
they already have.
Right, you just remake Red and Blue again. Like,
yeah, just back it up.
Red and Blue remakes for the 20th fan. I would be so disappointed and frustrated in the Pokemon company if when 25 years comes, there's not a remake of Red and Blue sitting in my Nintendo console of whatever that is in 5 years.
That's right.
I've had enough ports of Red and Blue to fill a bucket.
I mean, on like a new engine, maybe it would be cool. I would like to see a collection of like multiple generations. I think it would be kind of cool to see a remake that takes things from each of them and kind of combines them into like an anniversary thing.
All right, to celebrate fantasy all booking of it, over here. Settle just, down.
Hey, you know.
And it's going to be an MMO, and you can make your own Pokemon.
You get to design your own Pokemon, and you can print
stickers.
If you go to the truck on the bridge.
I hear for the 25th anniversary, they're bringing back Blockbuster, and you'll be able to take your games in and print your favorite stickers. This next email is from Layton. Hey, Steve, I really hope you can bring this up with the super effective game gang next week. This was like 6 days ago. So we're on schedule here.
Got it. Nailed it.
On last show, you guys were discussing Looker and his first appearance in the game. I wanted to mention that there was a character in Generation 1 on the SSN who said that he is a global police agent. I assume that Looker and this character were the same. I feel like the Generation shorts are also a nod towards this ideal. Do you think Looker is the character from Generation 1? Love to hear your thoughts on this. P.S. I've been listening since 2010. And I remember you being a rival podcast of Pokemon Monday. Thanks for keeping the show going. It's a highlight to listen to each week. Thanks, and keep it up, Layton.
Man, that's the year Gen 4 came out.
What? No, Gen 4 came out in 2006. Settle down, Micah. I don't think Pokemon Monday ever acknowledged our podcast, and probably at the time we were significantly smaller than them. I believe they stopped after about 30 or so episodes. I know that was hosted by Games Radar. And yeah, I enjoyed that podcast at the time, and I definitely thought to myself, starting It's Super Effective, that ISE could be a better podcast. Whether or not you think we're better, we definitely have lasted the test of time compared to Pokemon Monday.
Quantity over quality.
Right. But yeah, I brought this up actually last week, I think, with Travis that
I was going to say, I thought I feel like I'm having deja vu because I thought we.
Yeah, we talked about that a bit. I mean, it could be possible. I think you hit the nail on the head last week, Travis, that it's definitely a fun theory.
Mm-hmm.
Micah, real quick, what are your thoughts on the generation stuff? Have you seen any of it?
I watched the first half of the first episode, and then I said, if I continue watching this, I'm just going to watch all of them that I can in one shot, and I stopped and said I'll watch it later.
I was gonna say you got bored or tired 2 minutes out of 3 minutes.
Really liked it. I liked it a lot, but I didn't have the time at the moment to dedicate to it, even though it's like what, 4 minutes long or something like that.
Yeah.
I also thought you were going to say that you were so frustrated halfway through that you, and I was trying to think like what happens halfway through that first generation.
Just finish
I
the
can't
last
believe
minute.
They don't show the how hard the trainer had to work to get that Pikachu into that location.
They never acknowledged that he was red.
Where's the truck with Mew under it?
People are saying that he's Ash, but he's red.
Come on.
Come on,
I thought
guys.
That where was the GS ball? That's what I want to know.
That's the hard hitting questions here.
The
John
question.
John writes in. Hey guys, I recently discovered your podcast.
Man, we completely brushed over the last guy's looker question.
Oh, we talked about it last week.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Hey guys, B Squad here.
Get with the program. John writes in.
B Team Micah here.
Hey guys, I recently discovered your podcast. You guys were the first one I came across. And over here in Germany, active duty army, I am an American. This is making my workday so much better. I love listening to you guys. Keep it going. I will be supporting next paycheck. Thanks for brightening my day.
Well, thank you for brightening our Patreon donation total.
Thank you for brightening my bank account.
I say that sarcastically, but we do very, very much appreciate all of the support.
Yes, correct.
My email inbox is a disaster, by the way, guys. So if
I've been throwing money at it, and let me tell you, it's worth it.
Mike has been throwing money, and my email inbox is just being. No, I don't know what happened with my flagging system and my folder system. So I apologize as I go through these emails if they might be repeats. I don't think so, though. Adrian writes in, "Hey Travis, Will, SBJ, and the rest." Believe that's where you fall under, Mike.
The rest.
All right.
Hey guys, it's the rest here.
Bringing. No, I couldn't go anywhere with that joke. I love the podcast. I started to listen to it because of Pokemon Go. I play the video games, but not the TCG. I love the ending song a lot. I didn't listen to all the episodes, so I don't know all of the Pokemon of the week. If you still do that, my favorite Pokemon is Togekiss. Thank you for the fun. Sincerely, Adrian.
You're going to be switching the Pokemon of the week on me. I got to make a set for Togekiss when I already had one set for Dusknoir.
Nah, we'll stick with Dusknoir. But I feel like we've done Togekiss.
You sound so flustered.
And you do Serene Grace. You have it do Air Slash and Thunder. So you use Thunder Wave to paralyze them, and then you use Air Slash, and because you have a Serene Grace, they have an extremely small chance to actually be able to do a move, and you just do it and you frustrate everyone on the entire planet, and then you do like Roost and Nasty Plot just to make it even worse, and there's your Togekiss.
All right,
we did it.
Have a great night, guys.
Yeah,
so see you next week.
That's not even the ending song anymore, is it?
No, that's not. The shout out to Nick. I don't know if he wants us to say his last name or not. Nick in Slack.
The Nick.
Myself and him worked on the... When I say myself, I'm just trying to sound important, but we worked on the intro and the outro together. He's done all the music for Mythical and for It's Super Effective, and it was a bit of a collaboration of me telling him that no, the stuff you've made is garbage, you can do better, and then he does better, and then I say, no, you can do a little bit better, and then that's how we got the music for the show.
It's all awesome.
Yeah, it's all fantastic. The theme song is based on Route 201 from Generation 4, by the way. So,
hey, look at that.
They're
full circle.
Full circle. This podcast should be called Full Circle. It's really what it comes down to. But yeah, props to Nick for doing all the music. I don't think he gets enough credit. But the intro and the outro are definitely custom to the podcast. So a lot of people ask, like, oh, where'd you get that song? Or what soundtrack is that out off of? But it is custom. And that's it. Like, a lot of other people ask, can you give me the full version of the song, or what does the rest of it sound like? What is there's the whole version? Nick specifically designed it for intro and outro purposes, so there's no like hidden 30 extra seconds to it. It is what it is. It's great, but it is what it is.
Only the finest of custom delicious jams on. It's super effective.
But all the middle music is usually music from just the super collections that you can get out of iTunes. So we'll do one more email. And again, if you want to email us, sbj@pkmncast.com. If you've emailed us before and we haven't gotten to it, it might be lost forever. So don't be afraid or don't hesitate to send in that email again. My apologies. Again, my email box inbox is a disaster, and once I get a couple hours, I'm going to clean it up and reorganize it to make sure it doesn't happen in the future. Last email here is from Tip. Tip writes in and goes, "Hey Steve, a quick follow-up / theory about the evolution of Alolan Pokemon. The examples you guys mentioned in the latest podcast, Pikachu and Execute, evolved by using stones. Perhaps Alolan Pokemon evolve into Alolan Pokemon, Meowth into Alolan Meowth and Alolan Persian, for example, but normal Pokemon can evolve into Alolan Pokemon via an Alolan variant evolution stone, an Alolan leaf stone, for example. Just thought that would be potential explanation for the logic of Alolan variants and your evolution and evolutions for your consideration." I actually forgot all about that Pikachu and Execute need stones to evolve. Where like Meowth,
yeah, that's...
and Ninetales and Sandshrew do not need stones, but that whole family line is Alolan, whereas Execute and Pikachu are not Alolan.
We don't know about Persian yet, but presumably.
Right. But
I think it would be a little odd to have an Alolan Meowth and then not an Alolan
Persian. Agreed, but I mean, for the sake of accuracy for what we know so far.
Speculative.
Yeah.
I almost think that whenever I'm thinking about the Alolan stuff, I like to think of it from the perspective of like
Yo-Kai Watch.
You live in Alola and nothing outside of Alola exists, right? So it's like its own enclosed environment.
Really? I don't think that at all.
No, hear me out. So like the idea that you would have to have stones to evolve certain types to Alolan types would imply that those stones already exist on the island and they have a use specifically for Pokemon that come from outside of Alola, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like,
if you live in Alola, there's no use for those stones, really, because... that's just those are your Pokemon. That's the Pokemon of the region that you live in, right? So the only reason that they would exist is for people who come from outside of Alola and bring Pokemon with them that would need those stones to evolve. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I see it more as you look at a Pokemon like Mudbray, and its Pokedex entry says that it existed all over the world, but it was hunted, and so it only exists in Alola now because they don't hunt donkeys there like the rest of the Pokemon world, oddly enough. It's
such a terrible Pokemon.
What? Mudbray is cool.
I guess what I meant when I said that is that if you think about it like it's its own region and its own culture, I guess. And anything outside of that is, I guess, I don't know.
I mean, it all still exists, clearly.
It all exists, absolutely. But I don't want to discount like what is happening, what exists on Alola.
You got Cousin Oak there, and obviously real Oak exists in Kanto.
The second that you start introducing things that are like Alola relies on everything else instead of just Alola itself, then I feel like it starts to discount the, I guess, like integrity of Alola. Does that make sense?
By
integrity, I mean like storytelling wise, like, and as far as the game goes, like it's the region that you're in. You don't really want it to rely on all of the other regions that came before it. You want it to rely on Alola because that's where the game's taking place, you know?
I think all the regions
getting late. I have no desire to think about the integrity of a fictional location.
I mean, I disagree with Mike. I think all the regions balance each other in some way. I just don't think we have enough information about Alolan forms to jump to a reasonable conclusion of how that fits into the overall Pokemon lore. My guess would be it has something to do with the research factory and something to do with how Pokemon live in certain habitats and blah, blah, blah. But as we get closer to Sun and Moon, I'm sure Pokemon will show us, because they've showed us 90% of the game so far.
I mean, we keep saying that, but I would guess there's a lot of new Pokemon we haven't seen yet. I'm guessing there's a lot of Alolan forms we haven't seen yet. I feel like there's still a lot more to know about.
Yeah.
I mean, they revealed Mimikyu, and that's pretty much 90% of what the game's going to be anyway. Right, yeah. So.
I feel like Pokemon is definitely scared to get to the 1,000th Pokemon, and that's why they're doing Mega, and that's why they're doing Alolan, because they want to do new Pokemon, but I feel like that 1,000th Pokemon has not been decided yet, right? Because that's important. Like, that is a milestone. Like, that is we cannot mess this up.
Right.
So I just feel like the Mega Pokemon and the Alolan Pokemon, while they seem great, Alolan forms, I mean, while they seem great, while they're fantastic, while I like them a lot, they're just delaying adding more Pokemon to the Pokedex. I think they finally realized, like, maybe we have too many, and we need to slow down, because what happens when we get to 1,000? How does that affect our 20 years? I could be wrong. Maybe they have 300 Pokemon waiting for us, and they've only shown 37 of them so far. Speaking of 700-some Pokemon, we pick one a week to talk about.
Nice. And
this week, we picked Dusk Noir.
Beautiful.
And I'm going to throw it to Travis. Thank you. It's been a good episode for two-wheeled devices. That was a segue joke, I guess. Didn't
what?
Yep. Woo! Right over. Travis, what is our Pokemon of the Week? And it's all you.
Our Pokemon of the Week is Dusk Noir. Dusk Noir is ghost type, as you probably already know. And ghost types have an interesting role to play when building a team for singles specifically. Ghost types are the only type of Pokemon that are immune to normal type attacks, so that makes them among the only Pokemon, really the only Pokemon, that can act as a Pokemon to switch in to negate the effects of Rapid Spin. Rapid Spin is a move that does very little damage. It's a normal type move. I think it has 10 base power or something minuscule like that. But it removes all entry hazards from your opponent's side of the field. So things like Stealth Rock, Spikes, Toxic Spikes, Sticky Web. All those things... Or no, from your side of the field. I misspoke. If your opponent sets up Stealth Rocks and you Rapid Spin, Stealth Rocks go away along with any other entry hazards that might be on your side of the field. Spin blockers are not quite as useful as they used to be because of the Gen 6 edition of Defog, not the addition of Defog, but the change to Defog, where it retains its old ability of reducing evasion, but also takes away all entry hazards from both sides. It makes Rapid Spin not the only way to deal with entry hazards. So the fact that spin blockers counter only one of two ways to remove entry hazards, now they're not quite as useful, but they still have a role to play, especially on teams where you are relying on keeping those entry hazards up, on hyper defensive teams that might try to abuse something like Whirlwind on Skarmory after you've set up a bunch of spikes and stealth rocks. So you need something like Dusk Noir to be able to switch in when you expect a rapid spin from something like a Starmie, an Excadrill, something like that. And unfortunately for you, when you go and you want to use Dusk Noir because it's a Pokemon you really like, he's spooky, he's got an animation where he looks like he's pulling a Kamehameha right on up. But unfortunately for you, when you look up on something like Smogon to find out what a good moveset is, you find that all the movesets are designed for very low level play, because Dusk Noir, while having okay stats, has low HP and only has sort of small niches where it excels in comparison to some other ghost type options for spin blockers, stuff like Sableye, Gengar. Not a lot of people have thought about using Dusk Noir against the full field of Pokemon that can be used. So instead of getting a set that really works against anything, you get a set that's specifically tailored for what they call their PU tier list, which is like sort of a joke.
PU,
that's why they call it that.
Like it's and
it's been? It's supposed, yeah, I think it was called that as a joke, and then the name stuck because it's, I think, for something to qualify for PU, it has to be in the bottom. So to qualify, this is getting a little inside baseball on how Smogon works, but at the top you have Anything Goes, which is, as it sounds, Anything Goes. Right below that is Ubers, which is basically anything, with the exception of, I think the only exception is Mega Rayquaza at the moment. And below that is Overused, that's the most popular format, and that's everything with the exception of some of the strongest, usually legendaries that are at the top. Then Underused, then Rarely Used, and at the bottom you have Never Used, which I think represents the bottom Pokemon that are in the bottom 2% of usage, and then, or something like that, or they're used only 2% of the time, or I forget. But then of the Pokemon that are in Never Used, if they're only used less than 2% of the time in that format, then they qualify for PU. And so Dusk Noir, when you look up sets for him, you're only going to find stuff that fit against that very specific and narrow field. So it doesn't actually work if you're actually trying to build a team against your friend who's probably going to be using, might be using like an Excadrill or a Starmie as their rapid spinner. So I'm going to base the set off of theirs, but tweak it a little bit so that it would work against those more overused Pokemon. We're going to keep the basics of the set. We're going to do 252 EVs in HP and attack, given that you have decent enough bulk. Actually, you have great defenses in 135 and 135 for defense and special defense. Your HP is only 45, but you're still going to invest in HP to survive a little bit, and then the other 252 into attack, and you're going to give your Dusk Noir a life orb because you want enough offensive presence so that you can either take out the rapid spinner and then not have to worry about rapid spin, or deal enough damage to the Pokemon they switch into when they see that you switch into your spin blocker. Your moves are going to stick with the basics that they have, which are Shadow Sneak to get a stab move that has increased priority. Sucker Punch also has increased priority, and Dark Type is also a good coverage to have. Earthquake is great coverage to have. It hits spin blockers like Excadrill and you know, not that people use Avalog, but technically Avalog has Rapid Spin, so you could use it there too. And then they recommend either Ice Punch and Pursuit. That's because I think that PU tier has a lot of flying types or something, maybe, or maybe flying and ground for ice, and then Pursuit is just a good move to have. But here I would recommend Thunder Punch instead. And the reason why is because when they build the set, they don't have to worry about Tentacruel, because Tentacruel is in their their underused tier, which is above in a place where you wouldn't typically see Dusknoir. But if you're playing just a casual game against your friends, you'll probably want an electric type move to deal with Tentacruel, and you already have Starmie covered with Shadow Sneak. But still, between ground, electric, ghost, and dark, you've got the coverage you need to have a super effective attack against over half of fully evolved Pokemon that can use Rapid Spin. And given that the Hitmon fighting type Pokemon like Hitmonlee, Hitmonchan, and Hitmontop also can learn Rapid Spin, you technically don't have anything that's super effective against them, but they can't use their stab move against you. You're immune to fighting, so you also have the advantage there. So you've got a Pokemon that has a strong advantage against a lot of the Pokemon that can use Rapid Spin. And between those four types, you've also got a lot of coverage for whatever they switch out to when they see that you just block their Rapid Spin. So the idea is you set up a whole bunch of hazards with maybe a Skarmory or, you know, something with Stealth Rock, and then you've got them set up, and then you haven't killed off enough of their Pokemon that you can really start stalling yet, because they're just going to switch into their Rapid Spinner and spin them off. So you switch into Dusknoir, you take you absorb the Rapid Spin, and then you either kill their Rapid Spinner, thus making your entry hazards permanent, or you deal enough damage to whatever they switch into to make that trade successful for you. Adamant Nature, by the way, that's the thing I didn't mention. And Pressure is better than Frisk, and I think that's
Pressure
pushing down on me, pushing down on you under pressure. I think that's it.
Tell me, what about the integrity of Dusknoir?
Dusknoir is a spooky fellow who likes to play tricks and doesn't have much integrity.
He's got those grips, though. I bet those grips have integrity.
Integrity in the fact that they are strong and will hold whatever is in his hands, but not the integrity of character that comes to mind when you think of integrity.
Like the integrity of Alola is what you're saying.
Precisely.
Dusk Norar is a combination of Dusk and Norar, which is the French.
Oh, good, clever.
Word is French. It's French for black.
They really hit it out of the park on that one.
Color is black. The shiny version is a blue shade instead of like a brownish slate color. That's about it. Not much going on for Dusknoir here.
He's got a cool mushroom on his hat. Whatever that is.
Believe it's collar.
Oh. Mushroom on his head. What are you talking about?
I don't know. He's got like a thing on the top of his head.
Oh, I see. Guess I see, yeah, what you're talking about. It's an antenna, according to the biology. The antenna on Dusknoir's head allows it to receive transmissions from the spirit world, which tell it to bring people there. However, the anime has also shown it protecting people taken to the spirit world. The band on its body can open up similar to its mouth, and it can use this ability to take spirits into its body and then carry them home as it travels to an unknown place. See, why couldn't we ride a Dusknoir in Final Fantasy XIV? We got stuck with Whisper. No one likes Whisper. What a lame ghost.
What? Wait, take that back. How dare you?
I will admit that I was completely zoned out during the Final Fantasy discussion at the top of the show, except for, you know, once I learned, okay, here's a I'll think about a funny Final Fantasy thing to say at the end of when you're done talking about it. What are you saying? There's a Final Fantasy game where you can ride a Whismur?
No, there was a Yokai Watch event in Final Fantasy 14, the MMO.
No wonder it's about.
Let you
ride a Whismur.
Have and ride Yokai Watch related things.
There's a yokai called Whisper.
Yeah, he's like your Pokedex, basically.
I realize the listeners, this is a complete rehash, but this is brand new content for me.
It's the great thing about the show is
we're all tired.
You get the beginning at the end again, so you really know what's going on. If that pretty much wraps it for us. A little bit of house cleaning before we say goodbye. If you're a recent Patreon backer and you signed up for the free stickers and buttons, there will be a Google Doc form that you can fill out with your name, your address, some other questions like shirt size and whatnot. That doesn't mean you're getting a shirt. Some people will, some people won't. I don't have shirts for everyone. But let me tell you, if you're an extra large or if you're a small, I got your number. I don't have any mediums or larges, but I'm going to try to include something unique in every one of those packages that go out. And like I said, I can't thank you guys enough for the support through Patreon. If you haven't and you want to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/itssupereffective will get you there. We have a really, really awesome Slack community that will help you trade, battle, breed teams. Talk about
hook it up with those Smith goals you need at 4 a.m.
Yep. If you are really into writing letters to people, we're starting that soon. Micah is at Micah the Brave on Twitter.
It is.
Travis
that's
is
me. That's me. That's it.
That's you. You exist. Travis
Micah
is
the B squad.
Travis is at the Travis W on Twitter.
And then listen to my garbage new podcast where my brother and I review movies and books and albums and games and things. It's called Arbitrary Archive.
Is it in iTunes yet, Travis?
Yeah, they approved it, which, you know, success. Is against their interests as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, it's there.
Good to hear. Good to hear. If you haven't done so already, we're trying to get to 700 reviews in iTunes before the end of the year. So please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. I know iTunes sucks. It used to be a good program. It's not anymore. But most of our listeners are on iTunes. It's the podcast giant in the industry. And so leaving a review there helps other people find the show and whatnot. So you taking 10 seconds out of your day to do that. Well, maybe like 2 minutes if you have to install iTunes. That really helps. Otherwise, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Pokemon Podcast. That's the best way to stay up to date with the show and what's going on. And you can follow me on Twitter at Dragging a Lake. Otherwise, this has been another episode of the Pokemon Podcast. And we are
super effective.
Yo-Kai Watchers.
What a dirty dog.
Hey there, Pokemon Podcast listeners. Do any of you play Minecraft? Did you know that you can play Pokemon on Minecraft with a mod, Pixelmon? Join the Pixelmon server that cares about bringing you the best Pokemon experience out there at play.journeygaming.com. Journey Gaming has 4 different Pokemon servers themed after the regions Hoenn, Sinnoh, Kanto, and Johto. Check out their website at journeygaming.com or jump right into Pixelmon experience on their server at play.journeygaming.com. I want to give a shout out to Pure_Riddle for this sponsorship over at journeygaming.com. Thank you so much for supporting It's Super Effective.